You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Good morning. You are now listening to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence on 3CR 855 AM or digitally on the Community Radio Plus app or online at 3cr.org.au/listen. And we're going to start off today with an acknowledgement of country. I would like to acknowledge that we are broadcasting from the stolen lands of the Kulin Nation. Wurundjeri Woiwurrung, I believe, is the group that we are on. And I'd also like to acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded. This show stands with First Nations people, and I support them in their struggle for self-determination, sovereignty, treaty, restitution, and land back. So let's move on now to the show with our fortnightly meditation on killing lawns and kicking fences.
Slums in some metropolitan centers are coming down, condemned by forward-looking civic governments. Down are coming the bad living conditions that produce bad citizens.
The practical uses of asbestos are very numerous. At least 18,000 articles are made of it.
In the spring, the nature-loving Australian goes bush.
The wife washes and the dishes dry themselves.
It's a serial pest.
Cities within cities, scientifically planned and built, where a man and his family with a small income can live with comfort and dignity as investments in democracy.
Yes, that's right. Out of the rubbish tip and straight to your ears is me, Amy. My pronouns are she, her, or they, them. And you're listening to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence. And what is the show about? Well, I was a 3CR fan for a couple of years, and I had a personal like of a certain topic around the cities and suburbs, and thought that it would be an interesting content for the radio show, the radio station. And so I came to the radio station and proposed this show, as well as doing some other volunteering. And then, it ended up becoming the show it is that you've gotten used to on your fortnightly Fridays. And it's about the cities and the suburbs, but generally speaking in like a general way, because we know that I go off on tangents. But it's about how they're sort of designed and how they create, they're designed for a specific thing. They're designed to facilitate specific things. And a really good example is starting with lawns. So lawns, you've probably heard that they're this 18th century aristocratic symbol of wealth, yet they've become this thing that we equate, you know, this beautiful green suburban landscape with, this clean in a sort of hygienic way that sort of erases whatever was indigenous there and replaces with monocultures of the same blocks of green everywhere, which regularly cuts down ecosystems and life for the vital organisms and insects and animals that we need to sustain life and life in the areas we live, because the whole world is interconnected. But they're also a symbol, right? Lawns are that symbol of aristocracy. But how did they become the symbol for the working people? Suburbs were built apparently for the working people. They were built largely for middle class working people. And although all of the working class pretty much lives, can be found and living in the suburbs. But actually, I'm wrong there as well. I should correct myself. They're not built for a class. That's kind of, they're not built for the middle class. They're built for the 1%. Housing is stock. Housing is not built to fulfill a need. I think that's something we got to get out of the way. And what I mean by that is, of course, governments have a duty to house people. But what is their priority? Is their priority to build housing to make sure that everyone deserving of human rights gets a roof over their head, that can afford to live there and live a good quality of life? Is that the number one priority? I would say no. I would say that housing is largely designed to facilitate two things, growth and profit. And housing is another stock option. Now, we often see Mr. Murdoch. He's the bad guy, in case you haven't noticed. At 3CR, we don't like Mr. Murdoch. We often see his media empire fight for landlords. And it's very clever, the strategy of the Murdoch empire, because the idea is that renters don't like landlords. Landlords worked to earn their house. So the renters are just, you know, spiteful. They're just failures. They haven't made and worked hard enough to earn the money that the landlords have, etc., etc. But actually, the issue is that you've got two classes there fighting each other. You've got landlords and renters. And landlord goes, well, I have my home and I just have one investment property. What's wrong with that? Well, it's a degree of privilege. We can talk about that. We can talk about how to have that degree of privilege requires an inequitable system where you have the haves and the have-nots. But then I think I'm falling into the trap that people like the Murdoch media empire wants me to fall into. And that trap is to be fighting amongst ourselves. Because people who own one investment property or even two investment properties, they can have a role to play in helping create a more equitable society, and they can be a roadblock, a massive roadblock, when played against people below them in terms of privilege and class. But they aren't the ones who hold most of the wealth and power, and they aren't the ones who maintain the system. Mr. Murdoch's media empire is an example of one of those maintainers. I would say Mr. Murdoch and his empire really understand class very well. And I believe he actually had a bust of Vladimir Lenin, believe it or not. at Oxford University, and he's clearly used his Marxist education for evil rather than as an economic a way to challenge a very oppressive economic system. So let's bring that back to the cities and suburbs. Let's take your suburban street. You've got houses largely looking the same. They were probably built all around the same time. They were built with prefabrication and they were mass produced to fulfill growth. The growth that we are told through the mainstream media, we are told that the growth through the mainstream media is to fulfill a housing need. There are not enough houses to house everyone. We need growth. We have to keep growing and growing because our population keeps growing and growing. We need these big farms producing excess food because our population just keeps growing and people will starve. But the truth is that if we thought differently and if we structured things differently, we could house everyone today. We have enough building space, we have enough rooms, we have enough buildings to house everyone. We have enough vacant homes to get a lot of homeless people off the streets. Land banking is a serious problem. We have so many pieces of housing and building infrastructure that we could be using to fulfill the priority of housing people. But the priority is not to house people. The priority is to generate a profit and not to care about the needs of the people. To care just enough, maybe, to keep them complacent and happy, but not enough to actually meet the needs of everyone. Because our system of those on the top making lots and lots of money can only maintain itself through having different classes throughout society. It's a very Marxist-y sounding episode, I know, but you can see it. You can see it in the very designs of our suburbs. You can draw a diagonal line through Melbourne. You can draw a diagonal line through Sydney. And you can see one side has the rich, one side has the poor. Those living closest to the city have more. The further and further out you go, have less. And that's that inequalities and that divide. So, when you look at that typical suburban street, you don't see community. You see alienation. You see people in little boxes, right? That song that I love by Malvina Reynolds, Little Boxes, that I'm sure people who regularly listen to the show will get stuck in their head and hate me for, but I'm going to keep playing that song because it is a great song to cover basically the part of the philosophy of this show. And yeah, so I'm a big fan of that song and I'm sorry about that. But getting back to the issue at hand is that we don't have, what are the words that I'm trying to use? We don't have any autonomy. We don't have any control. We don't have any community say about how that can look. So we're going to go to a little break now, and then I'm going to finish my rant, and then we're going to go to an interview I did with a neighborhood house, a really lovely neighborhood house that I think can encapsulate some of the amazing things that community can achieve together. But first, we're just going to go to some announcements.
Make your donation during our annual Radiothon and help us celebrate 50 years on air.
Donate to the 3CR Radiothon fundraiser this June.
To donate, call 0394198377 or go online at 3cr.org.au.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Care about older people's housing? Are you keen to talk to politicians and your community about why housing for older people is important?
Then become a housing champion with Housing for the Age Action Group. The Housing Champions program will train older people to talk about housing leading up to the Victorian election in November this year. For more information and to register your interest, go to Housing for the Age Action Group's website, oldertenants.org.au, or call us on 03 9654 7389.
A 3CR supporter.
That's right, you're listening to 3CR. You're listening to Kill Your Lawn, Kick Your Fence with me, Amy. I was just talking a little bit about what this show is about, but also driving home that point about inequalities in our society, in our lived environments, and how they manifest themselves. And so I said that I was going to say, what are some ways that we can address this? Well, I think about this really great example that was on a different 3CR show. People may listen to the breakfast shows on 3CR, and last year, one of the hosts of Wednesday Breakfast, who is no longer on Wednesday Breakfast because he moved country, but his name was Jesse, and he did these wonderful series of interviews with the Australia-China Friendship Society, and he did one interview with a academic from Deakin University about Lao. And I'm going to dig this up. I had it saved on an external hard drive, and I've accidentally buggered that hard drive, so now I need to find it again. But they have a different political system in Laos, a democratic centralism, which is what the person was talking about. I should say straight up that for me, I don't care what utopia you want for this land. I just want us to work towards something better. So I am not saying that Laos democratic centralism is the way for us to go. I'm just saying that it is an example of doing things differently. So anyway, the academic gave an example, and it was really interesting because the local streetscape where the people were living in this part of Laos were living, that the academic was talking about, the people worked together on a regular basis, like once a week or once every 2 weeks, to tidy up their street together and do the gardening together. And that was something that had culturally evolved in Laos under their democratic system, and also from their cultural history prior to the establishment of that political system. So what we have is a totally different way of viewing the street, because our streets are little boxes. Our streets are little castles where everyone gets their little piece of aristocratic lawn. And what we have is a fear of our neighbours. We don't want to talk to our neighbours. We don't want to kick some fences and get to know each other. We want to stay divided. We don't want to talk to each other. And, you know, there's some perks to having your own private space and stuff like that. But, you know, there's also a lot of value in trying something a little different. For example, I lived in what was called a pocket neighborhood. Now, a pocket neighborhood is a specific term. Think of a street that has a end to it. You know, like a dead end on the street, no through road. That's what it calls a small no through road, where you have maybe a dozen houses along each side. It's very shady. It's got established trees, and there's a lot of like community connection and stuff happening in there. I'm sure you've lived in one or seen one at some point in your life. I have. And in this community, people were parents. This was in Coburg. Parents had great relationships. They were the leaders in building this community because the parents all became friends with each other. They all shared their gardens with each other. They all kept an eye on each other's kids. And the kids had relatively safe, free access to the streets, with always an adult present looking out for them. And in general, everybody knew their neighbor on the street. Even us renters who came and gone were welcome to the street. And we talked to each other about our gardens. And even though it was still a little bit boxy at times, because that's how the suburbs are, we didn't fully break out of those boxes, we challenged it. And I don't think people, you know, thought very academically or or went about with a manifesto to go change it, but it just emerged organically out of the way people were living. And it was partly because of the street, because there wasn't a lot of car traffic. There wasn't really a need for the car traffic. It was really shaded. The gardens were sort of old quarter anchor block houses from the 1920s. Like, not, we're not even talking the baby boomer housing period. We're talking 1920s houses. So there's like even bigger gardens than maybe some of those boomer houses had. So it was a really beautiful street, and it is a really beautiful street. I'm just a renter. I just don't get to choose to live in any one place for too long. But that was an example to me of community coming together. And that example in Laos of communities taking care of their own streetscape opens up a whole range of possibilities. I really encourage people to, if they've not ever walked along the bike path on the Upfield line, particularly past Brunswick, it's been there for several years now, there's the train line that's raised above the ground, the underpass, and you can walk along where they've put all those native plants along there. Look, I'll be honest, as a horticulturalist, I think they can do better, but after about 5 or so years, it is looking really lush, it is looking beautiful, and there are a lot of beautiful community projects building off that. And it's a totally different experience. Now, that little Upfield line is managed by contractors. I used to do their job, not for that specific spot, but the style of gardening. I walk through there, I see how they're doing things, I know it could be better. I see that they've left a cotoneaster plant sitting there at Moreland Station that shouldn't be there because it's an invasive species, and it's clearly been there for years and no one's been bothered to chop it, and it's grown very mature and it's only becoming a bigger problem for someone down the line. But imagine if that area was taken care of by a friends group, like a Friends of the Upfield Line group, where they took control of that area. They maybe made some agreements, like it has to be 80% indigenous species to the endemic to the area, and maybe some agreements like that. And imagine what the community could do with that. And imagine the community connection that could be built with that. That's the sort of thing that can help people in times of crisis, that kind of community connection, like the COVID crisis. So that's kind of what this show is about. And I take time to explain it because I think it's really important. And I don't think outside of 3CR Community Radio, there's anyone really talking about these things that happen like this and how important they are, but also their, I guess, revolutionary potential. I think that going back to Mr. Murdoch, the way he divides us is by keeping us alienated from one another and hating another without ever really properly meeting and knowing each other. You know? So I'm just a big believer in community and expanding community and fighting for community space. So we're going to go to a little break now, a little solidarity for people surviving. We're going to hear a song, One Day I Went to Little by African Boy. And then we're going to learn a little bit about Raynard Street Neighborhood House.
Yeah, yeah, AB, kind of whoop, volume one,
all right then, let me tell you about a little trip I had, innit, like one day I was just going to Lidl, innit, and this is how it went, check it.
One day I went to Lidl, I went to shoplifting Lidl, then I got caught in Lidl, now I don't go back to Lidl. One day I went to Asda, I went to shoplifting Asda, then I got caught in Asda, now I don't go back to Asda. One day I went to Lidl, I was really, really hungry. I went to shoplifting Lidl, cause I had no money. I looked around, and no one was looking. So I put some tools in my pocket, and I walked towards the door. As I was walking on the shop floor, I saw the security guard, he was Nigerian, big black hench and raw. So I put my hands in my pocket, and I walked towards the door. The security guard said, S, what do you take me for? One day I went to Lidl, I went to shoplifting Lidl, then I got caught in Lidl, now I don't go back to Lidl.
One day I went to Asta, I went to shoplifting Asta. Then I got caught in Asta, now I don't go back to Asta. One day I went to Asta, my breath was really, really smelling. I went to shoplifting Asta, cause EMA didn't pay me. I put some chicken in my pocket, and I tried to walk out of the door. The security guard said,
can I see what's in your pocket, please?
So I emptied out my pocket on the shop floor. The security guard said,
hey mate, why did you take this for?
So he took me up to his office and made me sign a contract. He even took a photo and told me never come back. One day I went to Lidl, I went to shoplifting Lidl. Then I got caught in Lidl, now I don't go back to Lidl. One day I went to Asta, I went to shoplifting Asta. Then I got caught in Asta, now I don't go back to Asta. One day I came to England without a real passport. I got past immigration without getting caught. Now I'm in England, I must go secondary school. I am 19, but I lied and said I am 14. So I'm in year 9, and I am doing my SAS. I love to eat chicken and chips and let nice go on MSN. One day I was in the bath, but Imbo man came to my door. He said, oh, Olusola Ajose, we are immigration. One day I went to Lidl, I went to shoplifting Lidl. Then I got caught in Lidl, now I don't go back to Lidl. One day I went to Asta, I went to shoplifting Asta. Then I got caught in Asta, now I don't go back to Asta.
That was African Boy there, singing a tune about racial profiling. Yeah, that's another way that they're another one in the media where they pit people against each other. We live in a country where tons and tons of food that is produced does not make it to the supermarket. We have enough food to feed everyone. We have enough unemployed to create kitchens, free public kitchens. We could do that. We could do that. We could fund free public kitchens, and we could just make sure, not done by Salvo's, not done by Vinny's, but just publicly funded kitchens that provide employment, but also meals, healthy, nutritious meals for people so that no one is starving. But again, that's not the system we live under, is it? And then so we bully in the media, we bully the shoplifters, the people doing it tough, making to have, you know, making choices that are tough choices in order to survive, in order to just get themselves some food. Because it's not easy getting food stamps, and it's not easy getting free food out of Salvo's and Vinny's. If you haven't tried doing it, then you don't know what it's like. You do not know what it's like to spend an hour on the phone waiting to see if you can get some food, to find out that the phone line has reached capacity for the day and you're back to square one. By the way, if you do find yourself needing food, there are food reliefs in every single council. Again, they're not perfect, but it is worth a try because, you know, you shouldn't be starving. But again, it's not a perfect system, and we should demand more. We're now going to go to an interview I did at Raynard Street Neighborhood House. Neighborhood houses, to me, are the sort of things we should be putting more money into and not less. But unfortunately, it seems that we are seeing less funding for them, and that so far this year, it's not going well. The campaign to secure more funding for neighborhood houses, we did not get that on May the 5th when they were talking about the budget for that. So yes, let's now go and hear how Raynard Street Neighborhood House is doing and what that looks like for them.
So I'm Natasha Subero, and I'm currently the executive officer at Raynard Street Neighborhood House. And yeah, we're here on a Wednesday. The typical Wednesday here. Well, not that typical, actually. It used to be a bit different, yeah, but has changed in recent weeks.
So
I guess we're just here to take you through what happens here. And
yeah.
Yeah, telling you also a little bit about the changes that have been happening and then why those changes were needed. So,
Cool. Already there's people here, there's a lunch happening, there's so much already going on.
Yeah, that's right. So, Wednesday, we have had a community lunches on Wednesdays for many years. around four or five years community lunch. We used to have two community lunches every week. We are now only with one, and it's basically because we don't have the operational capacity to support two. Both lunches were free, mainly all cooked by volunteers or with a collaboration with Corrections Victoria. So we went down to the two because of that. On Wednesdays now, we used to have a pop-up market, which basically was fruit and veggies for free. It was part of a food relief program that we've been running after COVID. And we can go here. After COVID. And so this is wet in there. The program, we have to, after 4 years of running it, we had to cease because it has, we don't have funding. It hasn't been funded all this time, and basically it's been the house running it out of our own funding or capacity, operational capacity.
I think people would probably find that kind of surprising walking by, because it's part of the park. It's got the big, like, little community garden next to it and everything. It looks like a place that's got a lot going on and a lot of resources.
There are a lot of resources. I mean, there's a lot of people on the ground that volunteers. There are more approximately between 20, 30 volunteers. So volunteers that go, that have been building that garden for the last 4 years, volunteers that do the coffees and the cafe in here, that cook the lunches, that help in many different ways in events, in admin, marketing. This house without volunteers wouldn't be running, basically. So there is a lot of resources in that sense, a lot of people dedicated and committed to it. That is supported by the core staff. I'm happy to actually take you through the NHB reports of the value of what we actually give compared to what, like the money value, the monetary value of that. That's
smells good.
You're welcome to join. This is Frozo. Diane and Frozo is been here for a long time. She's a neighbor as well. And the kitchen boss, basically, Mika, in the cafe.
And you've got this outdoor, like, play area. So is this part of the childcare that's attached to this?
Yeah, there's not childcare in here. This was childcare center many years ago, but it hasn't been long, long time. So that is a play group room. It's basically families coming every Wednesday and Thursday in the morning to play, to connect and play. Our focus is basically community building, community development. It's basically, facilitating activities and the space for people to connect to the place and connect with each other. So, the playgroups is one of the things that have been running for a long time. We often have people coming in, it's like, 20 years ago, I used to bring my child here. So it is something, that's been there for a long time. That's the playgroup room and the outdoor area, the sensory garden that we have. It's well loved. And as you mentioned, it's also the community garden outside. Yeah. I've been part of that. I actually was the community garden coordinator for years.
I remember, so I used to live near here, and I remember walking up Raynard Street all the time and being really like just amazed at how much is happening in this community garden. And then I would also notice you had like a notice board and you would do like little horticulture courses and things like
that. Right. Yeah, that's right. I was facilitating those things. It's been amazing to see that it's a huge asset for the community, and it has been built by volunteers, supported by the house, and the role that I was in before, we actually, that role had to cease. Like, there's not a community, like, because there's no funding to support that role anymore. So it's for about close to a year that hasn't been there anymore, like the role funded. But yeah, it is an amazing place. It's not like, this is just the tangible things that you can see from the outside, but the actual things that happen while this is being built is amazing. Like the connections between people, the sense of belonging, the sense of ownership of a place. Like, you know, it's incredible. Like people come in, the volunteers coming in and knowing every single plant and having been part. So you know, some people come and go, but there's a group of around, probably around 10 volunteers that have been coming for a long time, for a few years now. And that, you know, went through just walking around and dreaming what this could be like.
Yeah.
What can this piece what can we put in there? And thinking, you know, it's a different type of community garden. It is an open space. It's a communal garden.
Yeah.
It's a food forest.
Yeah.
That's the concept of it. So not a market garden, not a closed space. So it is actually amazing. It's for everyone, actually. Yeah.
I haven't lived here for about 2 years, and so I haven't really been here and to properly look at it for 2 years. And I can see like so many of the trees that have been planted in that time have grown really, and there's been a few changes. It looks amazing. Like it does look like a food forest.
Yeah, it is amazing. And it's incredible. Like it's for the enjoyment of everyone. We often see the kids going around, playing around, looking at the flowers, looking at the bees. But it's also, creating habitat, not just for humans, for the non-humans. Yeah. So creating this pocket of, we now see, you know, it's amazing because there's a mural that you can see in this garden, and in the toilet block in here, and you can see magpie and a blue banded bee, and it was basically that the concept of that, which was something that we did, was done in collaboration with the Torch. And when we were just, you know, developing the concept of that, it's like, well, the animal, do we want? It's quite present right now, and the magpie was one that used to garden with us, and then the blue banded bee was like the thing that we wanted to attract, and now we actually see blue banded bees in there. So it's amazing.
In the middle of Coburg, full of cars and smog.
Exactly, that's right. It's incredible. Come down to see spot the blue banded bees. Probably the dormant. Just resting at this time, but it's incredible.
One of the cherished things.
Yes, absolutely. it is exactly. It actually makes me. Feel really, I guess, uplifted.
Even though it is.
Yeah. And this is a greenhouse we had for about 2-3 years. And it's currently working connected to a project called Seeds of Change, which is it's basically trying to a space for developing skills in horticulture and for Yeah. Hmm. Women and women identified people. Yeah. So yeah, so that's been really nice to it's been beautiful to continue that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess what else can I tell you more about?
I always noticed out the front you had a bread pantry. Is that still there?
No.
No,
and
it's not.
That's actually, it is.
Because during COVID, that little spot out the front, I was here in 2021.
Yeah.
And I remember that there was, obviously you would have had limited contact by then, but I do remember that bread pantry being pretty popular at that point.
Yeah, it probably started 2021, 2022 that we put that community pantry, and it's no longer there. Right. And it's basically because we phased out food relief.
Okay. Yeah.
Again, because this neighborhood house and many other neighborhood houses are not funded for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's hard to support.
Mm.
So it's no longer there, and that's one of the things that. It was supported. We used to stock that through collaborations with Food Bank, Second Buy, and Open Table. It's not, the picking up fees, volunteers used to do that, but we still have to support them with reimbursement and that kind of things, and we couldn't. The house was supporting that, so we didn't have the funding for it, so that's why that has to cease. We decided to focus on the community lunches for now, the community lunch on Wednesday, because it still brings people together.
Yeah.
It's still free meal.
Yeah.
It's kind of a more aligned.
Yeah.
It's with our purpose, which is building connections.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So some of these changes with food relief are definitely a reflection of the lack of support that we had. And I think, neighborhood houses played a huge role, as you said, just before, during COVID.
Yeah.
And we used to cook during COVID. COVID was hundreds of meals.
Yeah, wow.
Take home meals. And and a lot of other neighborhood houses step up in situations like that.
Yeah.
And obviously the demand and the need for food relief still there is actually increasing. Like we see
absolutely
the changes in people that actually come here and who accesses that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it is not supported. And obviously it has a ripple effect in other programs and the capacity that we can put in towards other things.
You love coming here.
Me? Yeah.
Can I record it?
I tell you an example. Yeah. This morning I feel really bad when I was home. As soon as I walk to this door, my energy comes, I want to jump up the roof.
Yeah.
So this place for me is like a medicine, like therapeutic, whatever.
Yeah.
Like my own kitchen, my own house. That's how I feel. If something happens, I'm going to go to Faulkner. You know what the Faulkner is, yeah?
There's another neighborhood house?
No.
The cemetery. The big cemetery.
The big one, yeah.
Yes.
There's a
neighborhood
house in
Glenroy.
Glenroy, yeah.
On Cromwell Street.
Right, yeah.
Workers,
family
here.
Yeah, yeah.
We help each other, we understand each other, we communicate, and that's why everything goes smoothly and nice.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio. Just bumped into the lovely Madison, who does the show on the other week, which is Transcreator Radio. You're listening to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence on 3CR 855 AM. And you're listening to my interview with Natasha from Neighborhood House on Reynard Street in Coburg. And we're going to continue with that interview after a little bit of 3CR history.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Yes, we're back again on 25 years of raising our voices.
Yeah, what's been the highlight over the years since Amanda of raising our voices?
Oh, boy. The most recent program is the pension program, and that was a very interesting program because it had to get out there, and only 3CR takes things that the other radio stations wouldn't even take a sniff at.
You're listening to 3CR, 50 years of radical radio.
You're listening to 3CR, 50 years of radical radio.
3CR's coverage of the Franklin Dam blockade from late 1982 through to March 1983.
One kayak carrying a 16-year-old John Hawkins was taken under the barge and emerged eventually after frightening responses from the other protesters. He emerged with some lacerations and shock was only evident later.
There's been people that have gone underneath. There's duckies all over the place. The barge has stopped.
You're listening to 3CR, 50 years of radical radio.
Well, that reminds me a little bit of the coverage we did of DLF the other year. That was also kind of chilling to hear from the ground. Let's go back to Reynard Street neighbourhood house and with me and Natasha.
You know, the neighbourhood houses are here to support the well-being of the community.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the staff and volunteers need to be supported.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
To do that, and our well-being, I mean, has to be supported as well. So the lack of resources, it makes it really difficult and very stressful. And, I'll show you the papers on the trip. Whoa, do you want a meal?
Yeah, I'd love a meal.
It'll be a big piece.
What happened on May the 5th?
So basically, we were hoping that the campaign that's been going since October, the last year, will have some positive outcomes for the neighborhood houses. I mean, having funding increase and to reflect the reality of where we are at right now.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that wasn't successful.
Yeah.
Which is a surprise because that rally, there was so many politicians getting their photos taken with everyone, which is not usually something they do unless they're planning on, you know, showing, like, voting for it.
I guess I haven't been to too many of. This is the first rally that I've been to in terms of right neighborhood houses.
And
there's definitely was a lot of.
It seemed like there was a lot of support.
Yeah, it was, and neighborhood houses actually. We closed that day.
And went there.
But in general, we were like all neighborhood houses were engaged because we feel it.
Yeah.
You know, we feel it in our, not just in what happens every day in our lives, because we obviously put so much effort in here. Lunch for you.
Thank you so much.
maybe put it in here. Yeah.
It smells so good.
I bring
So Fro has been cooking here for a long time. Yeah. So she was one of the COVID cooks that was here for 5 days cooking.
Wow. Yeah.
And still here. this neighborhood house in 2025.
So it says that this neighborhood house, with an income of $387,654,
had a value to the community of $1,231,116. That's pretty huge.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And yeah, it is significant. And yeah, considering that you can see from there, like, yeah, what we make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for every dollar you make, $3.18.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting to see this compared to last year's report.
Yeah.
It actually has decreased a little bit because we had to,
yeah,
we have to shrink a little bit our programs. Yeah. There are programs that we have, like ACFI, which is an adult community education,
yeah,
supported by the state government. We run some of those programs in here, and they're quite accessible to the community, but they're not funded properly, so we have to shrink again, yeah, and unfortunately seize some of those. So yeah, last year compared to this year, the house has shrunk a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to go through a restructure,
yeah,
to be able to fit within the funding available that,
yeah,
we receive from, yeah, the state government and the council. Yeah.
So what's the future of this neighborhood house now that the funding hasn't come through?
There's a lot of work to do,
yeah,
and we're going through massive changes right now.
Yeah, so restructuring.
It's been a restructure. There's a lot of changes that have happened in the last. Yeah, I mean, in this year on its own, it's been massive changes in our operation, and you know, it has been felt by the community because, it's sudden, like ceasing the food relief, having to stop several programs because we don't have the operational capacity to sustain that. So there's a lot of work that will be happening in the next little while to rebuild foundations that are more realistic to the actual funding that we have available. And, you know, things might look, we're aiming to continue, you know, supporting the community and having a vibrant neighborhood house as it's been for a long, long time.
Yeah.
That it's something that can't really be supported. But what is the resources that we have?
Say there are people who live in Coburg who hear this and realize that this neighborhood house exists. How can they get in contact and support it?
Yeah, great question. Well, come down for the community lunches on Wednesday. Froso is, she's really like waiting for more people. That's one of the things. But yeah, look at our website and all the programs that we run. We have fitness classes. We have sewing, cooking. The gardening related programs, volunteering at the neighborhood house is another way to support. Also donating, you know, like the funding is quite short in here, and sometimes the basic things that we cannot cover, like recognizing our volunteers, so it's donating is actually a really good way to support us if you don't have the time, the spare time to volunteer, and if you have the spare
and you'd be donating to your local community, basically.
Exactly.
So we're about to finish up for Think Again to come in. I'm just jumping in there right before the end of the interview to say my farewells so that the team can come in and get set up. Don't forget to, you can follow this show on the 3CR webpage at 3cr.org.au/killyourlawn. And also on Instagram, if you like to use social media, I try to be good at social media. I don't put enough effort as I probably should. And that's at 3cr_kill_your_lawn. I will see you next
fortnight for more Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence. I am finally getting out there and adventuring. So I'm visiting neighborhood houses, hopefully riding bus routes soon, and visiting different suburbs to chat to people. So it's all kicking off finally. And don't forget, Radiothon is next month. So don't forget, $2 is tax deductible. $2 or more, donate to 3CR. You can mention this show as the show that you're quote-unquote donating to, but the truth is it all goes to 3CR. It doesn't actually go to me. My target's $1,000. So yeah, let's see if we can raise $2,000, huh? Let's shoot for the moon. All right, here's the rest of that interview, and please enjoy my favorite two songs at the moment, Little Boxes by Mavina Reynolds and The Price of Eggs by Carsey Blanton and The Burning Howl. Both songs have answers to the problems I have raised in this show.
We do have offered the space as a venue hire, so you can, many people, it's actually one of our only ways of revenue, consistent. So we hired the house for birthday parties or workshops, or if you have an event that you want to run in here, you know, that's a good way to kitchen hires for any small business that need to do the preparations or run their business through a commercial kitchen. It's a fully commercial kitchen. Can rent our rooms. That's it. That's those are different ways to support. But yeah, have a look at the programs. That's a lot that has been, as I said, we kind of shrink a little bit to create capacity for being a bit more creative and thinking of what's coming next. So there will be new things happening in the next few terms. Yeah,
that's right. It runs by terms, doesn't it? Yeah,
correct. So it's 4 terms, and yeah, we're in term 2 at the moment, and it's a quiet term for us. We had to close 2 days to be able to, but based on the to meet the operational capacity we have. But term 3, it's expected to come back again to full 5 days, and
Thanks so much for talking to me.
Thanks, Amy, for reaching out and coming down here to visit us and have a look at what we do.
My pleasure. Thank you. I got heaps. If you want.
Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes made of ticky-tacky. Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one. And a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university, where they were put in boxes, and they came out all the same. And there's doctors and lawyers and business executives, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And they all play on the golf course and drink their martinis dry, and they all have pretty children, and the children go to school, and the children go to summer camp, and then to the university, where they are put in boxes, and they come out all the same. And the boys go into business and marry and raise a family in boxes made of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
What are we gonna do about the price of eggs?
I've got a plan that has some legs. I'm gonna write a letter to my congressman, a strongly worded letter to him.
What are we gonna do about the rising seas, the flooding and the fires and the poor little bees?
Oh, we're gonna raise awareness on the internet. That's what we're gonna do about that.
What are we gonna do about the poverty, the troubling erosion of democracy?
We're all gonna wait until 2028 and solve it democratically.
That's what we're gonna do about that, my friends. That's what we're gonna do about that.
Good idea.
It's time to make a choice.
It's time to raise our voice.
That's what we're gonna do about that.
What are we gonna do if that doesn't work? 'Cause everything is run by selfish jerks, billionaires and bankers and businessmen. What are we gonna do about them?
What are we gonna do about these elites?
We'll all get together and hit the streets.
We're never gonna break.
We're never gonna bend.
That's what we're gonna do about them. That's what we're gonna do about them, my friends. That's what we're gonna do about them.
I wanna know how.
I wanna know when we're gonna do what we're gonna do about them.
What are we gonna do about the big bad boss?
Cut into their profits.
Turn them into losses.
We won't go to work.
No, we'll never work again.
That's what we're gonna do about them. Or maybe we could try a little sabotage
underneath the paving stones.
Laplace.
We're gonna make the bosses afraid again.
That's what we're gonna do about them. That's what we're gonna do about them, my friends. That's what we're gonna do about them.
What are we waiting for?
I'd like to know when we're gonna do what we're gonna do about them.
No, you're not.
What are we gonna do about the fortunate sons?
Put them in a rocket and 3, 2, 1.
Gonna turn the 1 into the 0%. That's what we're gonna do about them.
What are we gonna do about the crypto bros?
What are we gonna do about the CEOs?
The same thing we did about the kings and queens. Put them in the chippy trap machine.
That's what we're gonna do about them, my friends. That's what we're gonna do about them.
What are we waiting for?
I wanna know when
we're gonna do what we're gonna do, what we're gonna do, what we're gonna do about them.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.